T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Buffalo's own Dave Leventhal, editor-in-chief at Raw Story. Dave, good morning. Happy Sunday.
And same to you, Joe Beamer.
And we should say, I call this the Dave Leventhal effect. The last three times you've been on Hardline, the Sabres have won the day before.
I mean, it's clearly because of that, so I'll take full credit.
I think so. Let's get right into it, and let's start with something that, you know, next to the Murdaugh trial seemed to get a lot of the attention on the cable news networks this week, and that is Merrick Garland talking with Senate. What was that all about, Dave, and did we learn anything?
Yeah, so it was a Senate hearing and quite a high drama one, too, as you might expect. It had major partisan overtones and undertones, and Republicans on the Senate panel in particular pressed him over the Hunter Biden investigation that's taking place out in Delaware. And the bottom line there was that Merrick Garland said, look, I am not going to get involved. It's all going to be up to the U.S. attorney and that particular jurisdiction. And he basically just kind of put his hands up and said, don't blame me, regardless of how it goes. I am staying out of it on purpose. And it really underscores, Joe, just the political sensitivity, regardless of who's president, regardless of what party is in power when it comes to Department of Justice investigations of any sort, but particularly when it involves somebody who is very much in the political sphere, like the son of a president of the United States, in this case, Joe Biden and his son Hunter. So Hunter Biden has lots of troubles that are dogging him right now, this just being one of them. And we'll see ultimately where this goes. But again, just to reiterate here, Merrick Garland saying to everyone in a public forum, nope, this is not going to be driven by me. It's going to be driven by somebody arm's length away from me.
Another thing that has been getting a ton of attention, I would say, ever since the inauguration of Joe Biden, Dave, and that was this his push for loan forgiveness took another took another strike at the Supreme Court this week.
Yeah, and you know, a hearing there too, the oral arguments taking place before the Supreme Court. And everyone always tries to read into the back and forth that takes place among the lawyers and the justices of the Supreme Court. The conservative justices were very skeptical, at least in their words, when it came to believing that or indicating that, that this was something that was going to stand constitutional muster and whether the president of the United States actually had the power or his administration to forgive loans, to wipe them away that are already on the books. And one big question coming out of this is whether the Supreme Court, if it ultimately decides to strike down Joe Biden's plan to forgive these loans, if it's just going to be a narrow decision that focuses on that, or if it's going to be something that is wider reaching, that would speak to executive powers, that would speak to the president of the United States' ability, be that Joe Biden or whoever the next president is, to go ahead and make decisions that may, in the opinion of the courts, go beyond the separation of powers among the judiciary, Congress, and the executive branch. So nobody has a crystal ball, nobody can predict exactly where this is all going to go. And the nine justices themselves are going to be the ultimate arbiters of that. But definitely some high drama, and particularly if you are one of the people who may have a 5 or 6 figure student loan debt on your own personal books, very, very interested in the outcome of this case.
Yes, for sure. And that's another one, Dave. You know, I say there's things that usually will come back and we'll talk about again. Loan forgiveness is one of those. George Santos is one of those, Dave. It's to the point now where I just ask you, what happened this week in the saga of George Santos?
I mean, the better question might be, what didn't happen in the saga of George Santos? Another week goes by, new lies are stated, new lies are discovered, more drama involving his past, his present, and his future. One little snippet that we reported at the Raw story is that the Federal Election Commission is again on his case for basically just running a non-operation campaign operation, doesn't have any of the proper people in place, doesn't have a treasurer who may or may not exist, which is problematic when you are trying to raise money for your reelection campaign, which George Santos may or may not have in 2024. So it just, you know, he went on a show recently and effectively acknowledged that he had lied just routinely in the past and sort of just called uncle on that. But the drama continues, and one thing that also happened this week on the George Santos front is that the House Ethics Committee has said that it's going forward with an investigation, but that also, too, is kind of up in the air as to what that will result in part because this committee has a way of going on and on for months or even years before making a decision, and there could potentially be criminal investigations that would supersede anything that Congress, the U.S. House, intramurally is doing, which is notable because the House Ethics Committee would have the potential power to censure or even remove George Santos. It's incredibly rare for Congress to remove one of its own, a duly elected member, but there is historical precedent, and you have to go back about two decades to Representative Jim Traficant, if you remember him from Ohio, a Democrat who got kicked out of Congress because of rank illegalities that he was involved in. So keep an eye on George Santos. He's saying he's not going to leave. And so long as he's there, well, we're probably going to have more drama, Joe.
Yeah, Dave, and a story that broke, I think 2 weeks, I might be 2 weeks late to this one, but another congressman, Andy Ogles, it's now been discovered by News Channel 5 in Nashville that he lied about his college transcript.
Yeah, and not a probably George Santos level infraction here or allegation of one, if true, but at the same time is also going to make the headlines in the way that it did then because of George Santos, at least in part. Everyone's radar seems to be finely tuned to politicians who have lied their way potentially into office or misrepresented themselves while on the campaign trail. So Ogles is another one who's going to be likely in the spotlight for all the wrong reasons as a result of things that he may have, again, misrepresented while on the campaign trail.
Dave, the FBI and the Energy Department this week said that they believe that COVID started as a lab leak theory, but the debate is still on in D.C.
Yeah, the debate is very much still on, and here's why. There are no fewer than a half a dozen different government agencies or entities that are simultaneously conducting investigations into this question. Ultimately, where did COVID-19 come from? Was it something that was a naturally occurring situation, which is quite plausible because that's how viruses mutate, that's how they work. But at the same time, too, there is the possibility, and this is the latest government agency or entity to say so, that there could be another explanation for this. They labeled the Department of Energy, their findings, low confidence. It's not definitive, but it definitely casts a whole lot of, new energy, if you will, onto the idea that this was not a naturally occurring phenomenon. Bottom line is the federal government has come to no consensus conclusion on this, and it still may be months or years before they do, if they ultimately ever do. And I wouldn't be surprised, Joe, if in the coming weeks or months there may be another headline or another report with another government agency coming to a same or, for that matter, a different conclusion, and this debate will rage on.
And Dave, in the world of who's going to run in 2024, we found out someone who's not and someone who is. The who's not is Governor Larry Hogan. Did I get that name right? From Maryland, the former governor, Larry Hogan. And he used Trump as the reason he's not going to run.
Yeah, he did the Sunday show circuit this morning and said, nope, I'm not going to get in. And exactly the reason that he offered is he didn't want to gum up the works for others who may knock Donald Trump off his perch as the 2024 nominee. And Donald Trump is, I think, under any circumstance going to have quite a time and quite a challenge from people who have already gotten in the race, i.e., Nikki Haley and others who may soon get in the race, which could be any of a number of Republicans from Ron DeSantis to Tim Scott to Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, and plenty of others, too, who may see this as an opportunity with Donald Trump being weakened relative to where he may have been a couple of years ago and try to basically turn the page on the Trump era. So this is going to be one heck of a Republican primary, and Donald Trump's poll numbers are going down, and other Republicans are smelling political blood, which is why we're having this conversation in the first place.
And on the other side, Marianne Williamson wants to challenge Joe Biden in a Democrat primary.
Absolutely. And so Marianne Williamson, if you remember from 2020, she was a Democratic primary candidate. For a moment, she was really catching fire and getting a heck of a lot of attention and seeming like she could, if nothing else, cause some trouble for some more traditional candidates in the early primary states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. But she really fizzled out, and she never really went anywhere at all, never got, in the end, too much attention, and definitely didn't get any delegates or votes that propelled her forward. But this is a different situation. We have in Joe Biden a Democratic incumbent, and it's fairly rare for anyone serious to challenge a sitting president. But she's going to try and provide an alternative. She's definitely somebody who is very good at self-PR and public relations, so she's going to be out there. She was at Union Station here in Washington, D.C., just the other day to officially, formally launch and has filed her paperwork to go ahead and start fundraising, but it would be absolutely shocking if she was any more than token opposition to Joe Biden. If Joe Biden decides to run, which he has not at this point said that he is absolutely, definitively, 100% absolutely going to do. All indications are that he will and that it'll be relatively soon when he announces, but until he actually says the words, we're still in a bit of a holding pattern as to who ultimately is going to be the Democratic Party standard bearer going into 2024.
All right, Dave. Now, Ticketmaster, has been in the news, but also tickets. And Bernie Sanders has a new book out, and he's actually going around reading the book. Am I reading this correctly? He's going.
You are correct.
He's going on tour to just sit in front of an audience and read his book.
Not the whole thing, but it's a book event, excerpt, sure. So if you've ever been to a book event, the author will get up and do a dog and pony show. But Raw Story this week reported, and my colleague Matt Laszlo, our congressional correspondent, caught up with Bernie Sanders because we discovered that some of the tickets that were being sold by Ticketmaster for Bernie Sanders' show about a book about anti-capitalism were, in fact, going for $273 a pop, with ticket fees that were into the $40, $50, $60 range, well more than the cover price of the book itself. And so we asked Bernie Sanders, and Matt had a rolling conversation with him all throughout Capitol Hill as they walked along. Well, hey, you're a Democratic socialist. Your book is about anti-capitalism. Ticketmaster is under fire by the U.S. Senate for anti-competitive and monopolistic practices. What gives here? And Bernie really did not want to talk about it. So you have to read our story for the full back and forth, which is quite fascinating. But, you know, we really wanted to show there that this is a complicated issue. And even somebody like Bernie Sanders is very much entwined with the Ticketmaster juggernaut for events such as this. Bernie basically said, hey, I can't say anything. Talk to my publisher. This is not me. This is not doing it. But, you know, he also had the choice to engage in this type of activity and events at, you know, big ticket events at big venues, selling a book that he hasn't said one way or another whether he's going to pocket the proceeds, donate them. He's done both in past instances with books that he's written, although recently he has pocketed the proceeds and not donated the proceeds to charity from these types of book writing.
Well, another story you guys are working on over at Raw Story. I got to hear about this. It's Bruce Springsteen, some axe throwing, which, Dave, I'm actually, they have axe throwing now at Lasertron. So you can axe throw just about anywhere. In a rage room. This is a senator's reelection bid?
Oh, it very much is. So first of all, I got to say, if there was axe throwing at Lasertron when I was growing up in the Buffalo area, then we may not be having this conversation right now, because I have a feeling I might not be here, but very good thing. But anyway, the situation here is that Bob Casey is a senator from Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a pretty purple state. We saw that in the last go around with the midterm elections. He is pretty much at the vanguard, I would say, here in 2023 of doing creative political fundraisers. You know, it's just not enough anymore, Joe, to have a rubber chicken dinner here in Washington, D.C. You got to get innovative. So he is having two very interesting fundraisers. One is going to be a Bruce Springsteen concert, which will be an exclusive opportunity to watch Bruce Springsteen, the Boss, with Bob Casey sitting up, in their box or wherever they're going to be. But the other one is at an axe throwing venue that also has, yes, as you mentioned, a rage room where you can go in with a bat or a crowbar and bash the heck out of printers or computer monitors or whatever your heart desires, and going to pay money to Bob Casey's campaign in order for the privilege to do it. So, I know politics drives people crazy oftentimes, and it may, stoke fire and rage within you. Well, this will be an opportunity to really put that into action, if nothing else.
Well, Dave, next time you're in Buffalo, we'll have to go check out the Lasertron axe throwing room. It's on the other side of Lasertron, so you won't get the two confused. You can go Lasertron and then go axe throwing.
Or you can do both. Sign me up, Joe. I'm there.
All right. Now, Dave, another thing that you and I have talked about quite a bit on this show, and that's ethics violations. And you guys did a story on senators attempting to explain why other senators seem to never get punished.
Yeah, we did an investigation that published a few days ago. Again, Matt Laszlo, my congressional colleague, and I reported that there had been 1,523 instances of complaints over the last 16 years that had been logged with the Senate Ethics Committee. And of those, 204 of them were actually investigated by the Senate Ethics Committee, which means that the committee thought that there was enough smoke there to see if ultimately there was fire and that they were going to spend taxpayer dollars in order to get to the bottom of it. But guess how many of those actually resulted in an actual penalty against a senator, a Senate staffer, or a Senate official? I'll answer my own question. Zero. And that was something that was not only shocking to us as we discovered that and reported on it, but to many other people, including members of the Senate, who just simply didn't realize that. So it speaks to sort of the, if not my words, but others that we've talked to in the Good Government Group, the fecklessness of the operation for the Senate to police its own. And we caught up with two of the members of the Senate Ethics Committee, one Democrat, one Republican, and put the question to them and said, well, wait, what is going on here? Why the Senate is not lacking for scandals of all sorts, be it financial malfeasance, the January 6th situation. There are many campaign finance issues, legal issues, you could go on and on. Why hasn't anyone gotten punished, even in the most minimal level, for this? The chairperson of the committee, Chris Coons, a Democrat from Delaware, didn't want to talk to us. He seemed like he wanted to, but he wouldn't. He bit his tongue. But Senator Jim Rich from Idaho, a Republican who served on the committee for the better part of 15 years, he was very upfront. And he said, hey, it's a bipartisan process. We really try to get partisanship out of it. We have limited jurisdiction in what we can do. And we try to investigate these things thoroughly, but also too didn't quite have an answer as to why certain people didn't get in trouble. Now, one limiting factor, Justice Okota here, is that if somebody is in deep trouble in the Senate and they resign, the Senate Ethics Committee no longer has jurisdiction. So they can't push forward with an investigation into a senator who is no longer a senator. And there's a couple of instances over the past few years where It looked like the Senate Ethics Committee was going to do something serious, and then they ultimately could not because somebody just simply quit.
And Dave, final question I got to ask you. Actually, I might do two questions, but Siena Research did a poll of New Yorkers, and I'd like to, your thoughts on this. You're in D.C. You're covering all this political stuff. A majority of New Yorkers, regardless if they're Democrats or Republicans or independents, a majority of New Yorkers say that both political parties have gone to the extremes in the last decade. What are your thoughts on those findings? And would you say that that poll would get the same results in D.C.?
Yeah, I think you're going to see maybe a little bit differently, but that seems to be a uniform feeling across the country. There have been other similar polls in the past couple of years that have definitely indicated that people feel as if both political parties are definitely going toward the extremes, may not necessarily be at the extremes, but are a heck of a lot less moderate than they used to be. And it really just speaks to sort of the age of polarization that we have here. This is not the Republican Party big tent situation of the 80s and 90s. This is not the Democratic Party saying, oh, yeah, you know, we'll let in anyone. And, you know, whether it's abortion rights or labor issues, if you're a Democrat, we support you. Although I would note that there is certain tolerance for people like Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, John Tester, from a Democrat from Montana, who ostensibly are either already running for reelection or will be soon. They are not liberal Democrats, I think, by any standard current modern definition. But yet Democrats are going to put up with them because they want to retain the Senate and don't want to lose. They have a bare bones majority. So there are definitely, you know, still political implications at play here that will, you know, perhaps moderate a little bit the parties on both sides.
Dave Leventhal, editor-in-chief from Raw Story. Dave, I always go over the time I'm going to bring you, and I appreciate you joining me this Sunday morning.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you, Joe.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.